Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live's 100th episode.
This week on the podcast, Brent Mulder and Lila Scully offer their take on the Malaysia Air alien conspiracy.
Winston Clinton eyes Adolf Putin's plans to re-Sovietize the Russian border.
Bernie, it's happening!
CPAC offers answers to an America struggling with a disastrous clown shortage.
And Democrats' subpar basic math skills are causing yet another Obamacare delay.
Kirsten Gillibrand assembles the greatest slash weirdest coalition ever known.
And upskirting and trolleys are both things people in Massachusetts enjoy.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com, where you will discover that it's our 100th episode.
Congratulations to us.
We did a great job.
We did it.
We did it.
100. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah. Certainly not me.
No.
That's 100 is a number I don't have any, like, mental conception of.
Yeah. To all our detractors out there who said we couldn't do it.
To the two pieces of hate mail we've gotten in our 100 right. episode run.
Yeah.
Both of which were delightful.
Oh, my God.
I love getting that kind of hate mail.
Please.
Seriously.
If, as your gift to us right. for our 100th
episode,
you
just want to write about how stupid we are or whatever.
Feel free.
For it, yeah.
Yeah. Do it publicly, too.
Yeah.
Put it on our Facebook account. Tweet it to us.
Just make sure to link us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
In any case, we were going to try to do something exciting for our 100th episode, but then we didn't.
We didn't.
So it's too late.
Then we realized that every podcast is as exciting
exactly.
as what you would want from your 100th episode.
Right.
So we were like, screw that. We're not going to do anything.
Exactly.
That's not what happened. But
that's what we're going with. Say happened.
Yeah.
Today was the LA City Marathon.
It was.
I
and daylight savings, which was a rude thing to do to people.
Don't
I have run that
plan
marathon.
The marathon.
And the one thing that you don't want going into running a marathon is to have to lose an hour of sleep.
No,
that's
that
just
is
mean.
Bonkers. You already have to wake up at the crack of dawn to get to the marathon.
Right.
You're not trying to then also lose an hour of sleep just
I woke up at noon today and it was a disaster. I was just couldn't have imagine waking up at 4?
Yeah, no.
That's not what you want.
That's not what you want at all.
That's 3.
That's 3. That's too early.
It's too early.
Yeah, to then go have to run 26 miles
I mean.
The blazing heat.
Come on. Oh, it was hot
it was
today.
Really hot.
Really hot.
I was waiting for a friend. I went down to Santa Monica to cheer a friend on at the finish line.
Yeah.
It was very hot there, to the degree that I had to go buy a Gatorade. I hate Gatorade, but I just felt that dehydrated.
Well, you needed electrolytes.
I needed electrolytes.
Yeah.
Like the marathon runners themselves.
Yeah.
I was feeling about ready to collapse.
I feel like I ran a marathon because we roller skated for 3 hours last night.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was like our 100th episode party.
It was. Yeah.
It was a small one, but
we did some really good
We did some heroic roller skating.
Yeah.
Turns out, ice skating and roller skating aren't that similar. Yeah.
Lila is a very good ice skater. Wasn't the world's great? I mean, you were
not
fine.
Not super talented on the roller skates.
And it's not as if you were sort of like fumbling around, falling all over the place. Like, wasn't happening.
I was uncomfortable, though.
Right.
For a person who can jump on ice,
right.
I was too scared to so much as go backwards on roller skates.
Mysteriously, I can skate around
on
one foot. I can do
a hero on the roller skates.
I don't know why. That's just no.
It's the talent that you have.
I guess.
I feel like if we'd been rollerblading, the story might have been different for me.
Oh, I think probably so.
Yeah. I feel pretty confident about rollerblading as a thing.
Yeah.
But also, in rollerblading, you can put your... Like, you have the stoppers on the heel.
On the heel, which is much
better. I was having some awkward situations with the
roller skating stoppers are not...
No one's trying to get involved.
No.
In any case...
Oh, God.
In actual news...
We had some real, like, sci-fi shit going on this week, basically. Like, this is like some J.J. Abrams Lost nonsense going on.
Remember? A few years ago when we were having all of those plane crashes
there
out
was
of
that
JFK that would disappear.
Yeah, there was that Air France flight, too, from like 2009 or something. Do you remember that?
And
it went
from
missing
like Brazil
in the,
to
yeah,
France
Yeah, and it
or
went
somewhere?
Missing in the ocean,
in the
too. And it took
vein,
like 2 years
like
to actually
Swiss
like, find
Air
it.
Did that. Like, there's been some planes that have been up to this.
Yeah.
Or there was like a, was there like a Lufthansa flight or something? Anyway.
Yeah, sure, why not?
There have been flights that have done this. It was TWA. There's been TWA, there was Swiss Air, there was Air France, and now Malaysia Air.
But this one has some other levels of shenanigans going on here. Because basically what happened on Friday is we found out that this Malaysia Air, it's like a Boeing 777, went totally missing.
Yeah.
Off the grid. They lost contact with air traffic control, and sort of like nobody knew where the heck it was, like what the heck is going on. So then basically like later, they like... released sort of like who the passengers were or whatever, and we come to find out that two of the people who were there were using stolen passports.
Right.
Like, they, you know, there's like a a list of, like, you know, stolen passports, basically. Like, when a passport has been stolen, it sort of, like, gets reported or whatever. And so, like...
So that you can't get on a plane with that identity. So that you can't get on a plane. But apparently you can.
So wherever these people boarded, I can't remember. Like, obviously, they weren't checking too closely what was going on with the passports here. So it just sort of has, like, a whole other level of, like, what the heck was going on-ness to this, sort of. So, like, we've got, like, the world's intelligence community is sort of on this, like, trying to figure out,
that
was
the indication that there might have been something more than just a plane malfunction involved.
Right. Well, and the way it sort of went down, too, because they didn't receive a, usually, like, you know, they were at cruising altitude, so they were high, and then they disappeared. So usually you would receive a distress signal, you would, there would be, like, some sort of, like, emergency, like, situation that would have happened. So it's just very odd that it just sort of, like,
disappeared,
and then, like, people realized it had disappeared when, like, they didn't have radar sort of contact with it anymore, as opposed to, like, there's some shit going on this plane. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that never happened.
And apparently, they're now saying that the radar indicates that the plane may have tried to turn back after it took off.
Well, and that's, I think, the military radar, because, like, the radar from the air traffic control, like, never sort of, like,
but
it can't do that.
But a lot of the time, when planes go through military airspace, regular air traffic control radar is not permitted to track them because you're not permitted to track radar in military airspace. That's what kept happening out of JFK when they had all those plane crashes. They were all crashing over this military base, and finally it turned out that they couldn't track them onto the base because the military could track planes onto the base, but regular private, you know, airlines are not allowed to know what military planes are up to.
Right.
So the planes disappear for a while.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what happened here. Or I made that up.
Who knows?
It's hard to know.
I mean, I have a lot of theories being almost done with the first season of The X-Files.
Brent is well armed for this sort of situation.
If you need conspiracy theories, then you just contact
me. If your first reaction to hearing about this was not, oh, that's so sci-fi, and was instead, that's scary, Brent is having a different experience.
I know. Do you like how I led with the, like,
he immediately went into some sci-fi shit.
Right.
I didn't think of sci-fi at all when I heard about this. I was like, well, planes are scary.
I literally just watched the episode last night where, like, the government was, like, using unmarked vehicles to, like, transfer an extraterrestrial being, like, across the country, in a semi-truck. So, obviously, that's what's going on here. So,
yeah. They did find some what they think was debris off the coast of Vietnam, I think. So they're doing a search
Just as of today, they think that they found, like, the door. But even, this is what happened in that, because I was watching Meet the Press, and they were talking about that, like, Air France flight or whatever it was. And that happened there, too, where they found sort of, like, a piece of the wing or something like that, but still couldn't find it on the ocean floor. Because, like, you know, when something's coming from 35,000 feet in the air, like, just because you found something that broke off of it in the air, it could be, you know, 100 miles away from there if it's traveling 500 miles an hour. I mean, you don't know that just because they found a piece of it here, I mean, I suppose it probably, you know, gives them a little bit smaller of a grid to look for, but they still may not find this.
They don't
plane
have to search the entire world for it anymore.
But beyond that, they still, we may not know what happened
here for
a while.
Does it boggle your mind that planes can disappear and just not be found in this modern day and age?
It really does.
Isn't that creepy?
Well, I texted you when I saw this on Friday, and I was like, a plane disappeared, and you were like, what?
Right.
Exclamation point. Not, you know, like,
it can't
I mean,
be a thing. It's a thing, I guess.
I guess.
Especially ocean planing. This is what I think is wrong about flying over oceans. If there were a way to fly only over land to get to the rest of the world, I feel like I would maybe start doing that.
Having seen a map.
Right. You know for a fact that's not a realistic goal.
No. But I agree with you that if it was a realistic
it'd
goal,
be great,
that'd
right?
be what you want.
If you could take a train from Los Angeles and some like train through Russia or something like that. I mean, Sarah Palin can see Russia from her house, so it's not that far. But
Well, it's like when yesterday when we were talking about something and I said that Australia was busing people to Australia.
Yeah.
I don't remember what we were talking about. Remember?
Yeah.
But
we're talking about the Australian Open.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They weren't busing people. Australia was not busing people to Australia. Oh, no.
No, they can't. That's what I mean.
They were bringing people from all over Asia to try to make their tennis tournament seem like the Asia tennis tournament.
Yeah, I don't know how we got
talking about that. But he expressed it as them busing people in.
Busing people in. That's not what they did. You can't
bus people. Not in Australia.
No.
That's not where.
No. You can bus people within Australia.
Yes.
You cannot bus people to Australia.
It's almost dangerous to do that, even.
Probably.
You're not going to take a bus across
it's
Australia.
It's dangerous just to be there.
No, once you're there, you're already taking your life in your hands.
Totally.
And I saw a thing on Huffington Post or something this week that Sydney is one of the most expensive cities in the world.
What?
And I was like, I mean, maybe because it's so far from everything that everything needs to be shipped 1 trillion miles to get
that
there.
That could be.
But also, like, it's nowhere. So, like, why? Is it that in demand?
I was going to say, it shouldn't cost that much for, like, real estate. Like, you shouldn't have to be...
They should be asking people to take the real estate because it's death real estate, so it shouldn't just be, you know,
yeah,
out there for
people. You die from anything there.
Exactly. Spiders, sharks, they have everything that's dangerous.
Snakes.
Right there. Snakes. Mm-hmm. The worst. Blech. Also, bunny rabbits.
Heat?
They have
heat there.
They have an overpopulation of bunny rabbits.
Oh, God.
Someone introduced a bunny rabbit into Australia at one point, like, went back when they were making prisoners live there. And bunny rabbits don't have any natural predators there, but they are natural predators to some kind of frog. Oh. So there was, like, there's like a frog shortage because there's bunny rabbits running, something like that. Like, it's some, or the frogs are eating the bunny rabbits. Something is going on.
Doesn't
that's
sound
not
good.
Kosher. In any case, speaking of horrible things,
oh God,
we're still gonna have to talk about Russia and Ukraine because that is still happening.
It's
like, yeah, the international community is conspiring to make us talk about international politics.
I know, it's the worst.
So, on Wednesday of this coming week, Obama is planning to meet with the new head of Ukraine's parliament.
Right, who's the pro-West.
Who's the pro-Western guy.
Right.
And his last name is Yatsenyuk.
Sure.
And his first name has a lot of vowels in it.
Arsenio.
Yeah. It's like Arsenio if Arsenio was Eastern European.
Exactly,
So in any case, he's trying to sort of like talk to the pro-West forces. Meanwhile,
right.
Russia is just sort of like, they got into Crimea, and now they're just sort of like slowly trying to like, you
right.
know, steal the rest of Ukraine.
Right. Well, the thing is, and you and I were discussing this earlier, because they are into Crimea, but Crimea is the area of Ukraine that sort of like has all of
Russian.
The Russians. That's where sort of like most of the Russian speakers are, and that's where sort of like, there's a lot of pro-Russia there,
yeah.
people there. And
a lot of sentiment.
Crimea sort of just voted to join
yeah,
Russia.
They had a now, weird thing where on the 27th of February, their parliament suddenly got taken over by a group of pro-Western, or pro-Russian legislators. And they decided to have a referendum vote on March 16th, which is coming up, to decide whether or not they should join Russia or let Russia annex them.
Right.
And then Russia decided that they would give them 40 billion rubles, which is about $1.1
right, so
billion dollars,
so
if they decided
them.
To do that. So they started bribing them. And then Germany got involved because they were talking to Putin on the phone, I guess. So Merkel was having a chat with Putin on the phone,
mm-hmm.
Called the vote illegal. And then everyone agreed they wouldn't recognize it if Crimea became part of Russia. But me and Brent were discussing it, and we were sort of like, we don't understand why this is such a big deal.
I know.
Not from, like, a sovereignty perspective. Like, I get why it's not okay for Russia to just go around deciding who is and is not part of Russia.
Right.
Because you can't just like, we couldn't just decide that Mexico is part of the U.S. tomorrow.
No.
Just because we decided it.
But if Mexico...
But if Mexico voted to join the U.S. and we wanted them to join us, couldn't we just have Mexico?
I mean,
This metaphor works better.
We're oversimplifying.
This comparison
but I mean,
works
like,
better with Canada, I think.
Probably. Yeah.
Because Canadians are just like Americans.
Right. I think
they believe themselves to be part of a similar type of nation.
I think the distinction is that sort of, you know, obviously, I think that the rest of the world sort of like sees sort of more, you know, nefarious
yes.
Reasons for Putin to be doing this. Whereas if we wanted Canada to just be like, oh, well, they're already the same fucking place
right.
anyway. Like,
exactly.
Who gives a rip? But like, this is obviously
this is
sort
obviously
of, this
part
is like a
of
part
an
of,
agenda.
Of an agenda. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I think has people worried. But you're right. I think on some level, if sort of like, I mean, if Crimea, which is the size of Massachusetts, like wants to join up with Russia, then God bless them, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I like.
Well, it's like, is it somehow different if they're being forced to stay a part of Ukraine if they don't share any, like, sort of, you know, heritage with Ukraine?
Well, right. I mean,
like,
if they're pro Russia and the rest of Ukraine,
like, why does
is
Ukraine even want them around?
Like,
screw them.
Right? I mean,
is there something important about? And Crimea is basically already controlled by Russia because there's all this. It's right on the Black Sea. It's a peninsula right on the Black Sea.
Right.
And Russia controls the Black Sea.
Yeah.
They have naval bases on Crimea. So, like, they already control Crimea anyway. It's just, like, asking for Russia to be involved in your business
right.
if you're trying to have Crimea in your country.
Yeah.
So, and maybe, you know, we're not experts on Ukrainian history because...
We're not.
We're not trying to be. But but it is sort of... I think what's been interesting about this story is how difficult it is to understand why any of this is so controversial. I think Hillary Clinton actually helped us understand a little bit about the perspective necessary to like make us think that this is that's making everyone think this is controversial. There's a lot of like weird things happening right now in Ukraine. There's like protesters that are taking over town halls and like forcing mayors to resign and fly Russian flags. There are like these, you know, in Sevastopol, which is where the Russia's Black Sea Fleet base,
yeah,
is people are like having like a sort of carnival, like walking around in town square wearing Russian flags and like roller skating. Mm-hmm. Kids are roller skating with Russian flag roller skates, and like a lot's going on. Meanwhile, they're having these weird standoffs with the Ukrainian military there, where like the military is stuck on their bases, and then they have what they're calling like self-protection squads or something like that, which are supposedly to prevent the Ukrainian forces from being terrorized. But they're just there to keep them in.
Right.
It's like such a weird... And then they're having these weird standoffs where they're trying to invade the bases, but then no one is moving... Like, the Ukrainians are just standing there preventing them from going in, and so they're all just staring at each other.
They've been also having, like, a lot of, like, these weird protests, too, where, like, the protests have been, like, largely outnumbered with, like, the pro...
Russia people,
too.
But a lot of people think that those are being organized by Russia.
So, of course.
So, in any case, Clinton makes what ends up being sort of a controversial statement, but in... The scope of this type of behavior is, I think, maybe an accurate comparison of what's going on in certain respects.
Yes.
When she compares this to Hitler's plans to take over Czechoslovakia, or places like Czechoslovakia. There were a lot of... And I know this because I just read a really big book about World War II.
Right.
And so I was just thinking about this, which is why I thought it was funny that she made this comparison. But there were all, you know, when the Nazis were sort of trying to expand their reach, there were all these places where they were like, well, they're ethnically German, so they need to be returned to the fatherland.
Right, well, and this
and that's sort of what Russia's argument is here. And then they're staging, like, a whole sort of propaganda, you know, blowout to make it look like these people are desperate to be in Russia, and maybe they're not.
Right, that's what Putin has been sort of, like, saying all along, is that he is sort of, like, he's doing this to sort of, like, you know, to protect, like, you know, Russian-speaking people, and, like, people who are just sort of, like, you know, from the motherland, basically, like, if you will. And, like, that sort of, like,
Of Hitler.
Right.
Not because he was also in the process of doing that, murdering 6 million Jews.
Right.
But anyway,
but Clinton, that wasn't her point.
She just sort of but made
whenever you compare someone to Hitler, everybody thinks that's your point.
Everyone gets nuts.
Right.
I think in certain respects, it's a fair point, because... This sort of seems like this is the kind of thing that starts World War III. Like, this is the kind, like, having a nation that is sort of, like, on the sort of offensive, trying to take over territory that they believe already belongs to them. That is exactly what Hitler did. That was what the Nazis were doing. And then they, you know, then they also decided that part of that meant that they had to get rid of everyone else.
Right.
That was a problem. But that wasn't why World War II started. That was perhaps their downfall. But, I mean, that was literally their downfall. That wasn't why World War II started. We didn't get involved to protect Jews. Other nations in Europe didn't get involved to protect Jews.
We got involved
because they were encroached. Definitely didn't. The rest of the Allies didn't get involved because they were trying to protect
Jews.
They were trying to protect territory because, you know, Hitler was trying to go into France. He had his eye on a lot of
different... Yeah, it was our European allies that we were basically trying to...
Exactly, that we were trying to save themselves. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was why the Russians were in the allies. He was trying to encroach on all this Russian territory.
Right.
Or on this, you know, the Soviet territory. And they were like, screw you.
Yeah.
It's really fucking cold here. You don't want to be here anyway. but in any case, this is the kind of argument that he was using in that. And that is what started World War II.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, why everyone's sort of tiptoeing around the situation, is because this could... be the thing that starts World War III.
Right.
Because suddenly we're all freaking involved.
Right. I guess the thing that is a little bit different is that, at least as of right now, I don't think, you know, on some level, do we really care that Russia is trying to, like, take back over Ukraine?
Well,
I guess, like, that's the thing.
It's
different than Hitler sort of, like, trying to take over France.
Yeah.
I guess. You know what I mean?
The difference is also, like, at the time, like, Germany was a new nation at that time. And so it had sort of empires that it could, you know, sort of harken back to and be like, this belongs to us because we're all Germans or whatever. But they were part of like a billion different empires. There was not a nation of Germany, you know, that was that old at the time.
Sure.
Russia already was an empire, and it lost the empire. And now it's trying to take its old empire.
So there's things that they can point to be like, well, this is already ours anyway.
Exactly.
So like, why can't we just have it?
Right. And it's sort of like, well... Who, you know,
that's not how it works.
It's not how it works, but like, who are we to know what's going on in Eastern Europe in the ex-Soviet states?
Right.
Like that our concern with the Soviet states has more to do with us not wanting to face Russia as a superpower than it has to do with our concern about the welfare of the people of Ukraine.
Right.
So it's hard to know what our aims are as well, because I mean, for all I know, everyone in Crimea has been dying to rejoin Russia for the last billion years, and this is their chance. Or Russia's created this entire thing, and no one in Crimea cares, or they're desperate because Russia's going to torture them to death, and we don't know about it. You know, like, anything could be the actual case.
And it's like we talked about last week, is that there's no real great answer for us either, because we're obviously not going to send troops in to, like, stop Russia from, like, taking over Ukraine. Like, that's just not going to happen. And also, sort of, like, the other options
that shouldn't happen. don't want to send...
It's not going to. I'm certain that it's not going to.
Yeah, that's their business.
And the other thing is that I just... There's no real, sort of, like, great way to deal with this. It's sort of like at least immediately, because like some of the other options that we have, like sanctions, aren't going to do anything sort of like, you know, immediately.
Well, and so, also, I mean, sanctions are just going to piss Russia off.
Yeah.
And I, as much as we're not happy with Putin's activity here and a lot of other things he's up to, I don't know that we, like, he's fucking crazy. I don't know that we really want to piss him off to the degree that we're the aggressors.
Right. My guess is that this, I mean, like, obviously this is, like, a bad situation that we're in right now, but I think that this sort of shakes itself out before we do have to deal with World War III. I don't see this leading to that. What do I know?
No, I mean, and I think that part of Clinton's aim in making that comment was to sort of dramatize it so that we would sort of get the picture that it's serious without, because that's what, it's hard to understand why this, because, I mean, other people have questions, like me and Brent have, about why this is so important to everyone.
Right.
Like, it's hard to understand why this is important. So I think she was just trying to provide some frame of reference. I don't think this is actually, like, a legitimate start to World War III. But she basically was like, you know, she said, you know, I said this to Secretary of State, Putin wants to re-Sovietize Russia's periphery, which is what we said last week, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's the name of the game here is to create a sort of trade union like the EU for Russia, which they already had and lost, so it's not worth trying, in my opinion, but go ahead. But in any case, that's part of it is just, this is more sort of like an economic concern than anything else, because it's just sort of like about political pulls of power.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And now thank God we're done with that, because the most exciting news.
Oh my God.
Of the
world. We could have led with
world,
this, and I thought about it. But
I know.
Like,
it is the most important thing that happened this week.
Right.
If you're thinking about real things.
Bernie Sanders readying a 2016 presidential campaign.
It's happening.
It's going to happen.
It's on.
He sort of hinted at it a while ago, but this is sort of like, he had an interview with John Nichols in The Nation where he literally just basically said as much as that he was moving forward with it. I mean, he sort of, you know, didn't say that he was fundraising and some sort of like specific things that you would be doing as a candidate right now, but he basically said that he was preparing to do it and that he would only be prepared to do it if he was going to create the type of coalition that he felt like could win. And this is everything.
It's everything you want.
Yeah.
He's 1 trillion years old.
72.
He's a socialist.
Yeah.
It's everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got all of the things that we rail on about other people not being able to be president because of, and yet somehow also he's everything. I don't know how he's doing that.
Right.
But I mean, this is, I think, like we've been talking about, he's someone who feels, you know, backed into a corner by a sort of Clinton machine that already exists that hasn't even declared yet.
Right. Well, he said that.
And
he basically
said that when he was talking about it. You know, he said that the sort of the path that we're on, not just as Democrats, but as a nation, It doesn't lead us anywhere new if the Clintons and, you know, the same sort of status quo type people continue to take power. It doesn't sort of buy us anything.
Right.
You know, it's...
Well, and he said in this interview, too, I mean, like, he's an independent from Vermont. He calls himself a socialist Democrat. So, you know, that word sort of, like, is,
a
boogeyman
he's
style
a guy
word.
Who
but
got,
like,
they tried to primary him out of the Democratic seat, and so he decided to run as a socialist.
Well, and
he was forced out of the Democratic Party.
And he was sort of, you know, he was the mayor of, I think, Burlington.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wins going away in Vermont. And granted, Vermont is sort of, like, a fairly liberal place, but he, like, won his last election with, like, 70% of the vote and carries places that elect Republicans to the state house. And I think that, you know, obviously, like, you and I get excited about things like this because, like, we love Bernie Sanders and we love sort of, like, the things that he stands for. But, like, and he sort of said as much in this interview, but I think that he really could speak to some of the things that, like, we're taking issue with. And the reason that he calls himself a socialist Democrat, and he talks about this as well, is not because, like, he's a big, huge, giant, like, you know, flaming socialist.
Right.
It's because what he means by that is that he doesn't want all of the power centralized within a few people in the country. And that's sort of like what he means by, you know, being a socialist.
Right.
Like he wants everyone to be able to sort of like take part in the wealth of this country. That's what he means. It's not that he wants to sort of like, you know,
make redistribute our wealth.
Right, exactly. And I think that the time feels right for something like that. And it certainly feels right for someone running against someone like Hillary Clinton. Yes. Because she
is a populist message. Right. It's exactly what we have said could win this next election.
Is he maybe a little too far to the left to win? I mean, I will have to see how it sort of like goes down. But there's no reason to think that he can't speak to, you know, I mean, the reason that I just said about, like, you know, all of this power being centralized, those are the things, like, that you and I have talked about that the Tea Party hates.
Yeah.
Now, am I delusional enough to think that the Tea Party is going to come running to Bernie Sanders? No. Right. But, I mean, I think
those are the issues that are going to sort of create, like, there are things that the Tea Party speaks to people about that sort of make people support them that are not just about hating other people.
Right, exactly.
There are reasons that people support the Tea Party that, you know, that otherwise nice, reasonable, would-be kind people support the Tea Party that have more to do with their own economic concerns than have to, you know, and their own sort of like vaguely populist ideas than have to do with their hate messages.
Right.
And someone who's a populist on either side can sort of gather the people that are responding to the populist streak in the Tea Party or that are responding to the far left and sort of like find, I mean, that's what we said about Mike Huckabee.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee has to be careful because he periodically spews hate. But when he talks about the economy, even I'm like, oh, this guy's not so bad.
Right.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Like that's something that someone like Bernie Sanders can do without the hate.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's better if it comes from the left because he can speak to those economic concerns.
Yeah.
And they, you know, people can try to make everyone scared that like gays are going to get married all over the country or something like that. But ultimately, does the specter of gay marriage like override your desire for like a retirement? Not really.
No.
Like at a certain point, the economic message is more important.
Yeah.
So like if someone can speak to the economic sort of concerns of regular people and just avoid the sort of, you know, lifestyle issues that end up becoming part of the discourse in these elections because everyone is trying to out-hate each other, that's what we're talking about that's what we've always said could win the election.
Yeah.
I mean, and I obviously he's going to run as a third party, but I think what's important about a candidate like him is that when someone like Clinton ends up running for the Democratic seat, they'll have to contend with all of these people on the far left that would vote for them if it weren't for this guy who is speaking to them enough that they're willing to essentially throw away their votes to make the point.
Right. Or to either throw away their votes, or the other reason that I think, because he actually hasn't said that he's running as a third party, because he could primary her. And I think that it sounded from reading that whole interview is that is what his ultimate preference would be.
That's
what everyone's preference would be. And I think that, like, the thing that you and I have always said is that even if Clinton gets the nomination, she's better served by fending off Bernie Sanders than not having to fend off Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Like, you and I will both be more apt to vote for her if she has to debate Bernie Sanders, because she's going to have to sort of, like, deal with the people who wanted Bernie Sanders, and she's going to have to get them to want to vote for her as well.
What the whole point of the primary system is. And that's why we've been so angry that she's essentially sort of been like declared the winner.
No one should get out of her way.
No.
Because certainly if you're to her left, you shouldn't get out of her way.
No.
If you stand for the same thing that she does, then get out of her way because you can't beat her.
Exactly.
But I mean,
if we are like, we can't assume that all Democrats think the same thing as a vaguely conservative, you know, establishment candidate.
Right.
Like, that's not how it works. If the New York City mayor's election that I'm never going to stop talking about taught us anything, it's the importance of primaries. Because that was a race that had its sort of, like, clear-the-field candidate that the establishment declared the winner long ago. And issues came up during the primaries that made people vote for a guy that wasn't even in the discussion when the primary started, and who was the farthest left candidate in the field, basically, or one of the farthest left candidates in the field.
Well,
and those issues and there was like a whole trajectory to those issues. There was the Anthony Weiner moment where everyone was like, well, he's an asshole, but I think I could vote for him over Christine Quinn. And then there was the moment where he had the fall for grace and everyone had already decided they didn't like Christine Quinn. And then, you know, it evolved because there were candidates in the field that had to talk about issues.
Right. Well, and the other thing about Bill de Blasio, and I think also about, you know, and I think the same about Bernie Sanders, is that, you know, Bill de Blasio was sort of able to make people care about some of these things. And I think
people responded to his populist rhetoric.
Right. And I think that the same thing would happen here. Yeah. Even if he didn't win, I think that it would sort of like awaken a sense of caring about these issues that you're just not going to get Bernie from Sanders, listening to Hillary Clinton yammer on by herself for an entire
Bernie
primary
Sanders
process.
Has an ability also to sort of like speak to common sense the way that Elizabeth Warren does. Remember the filibernie? That was eight, yeah. I watched in rapt attention for 8 hours while he talked about nothing, and wasn't even filibustering anything. He was just talking for 8 hours. But one of the things that he was doing during his filibernie was he just sort of like broke down what some of the issues that, you know, had been sort of like holding up everything right. in Congress were and why they were important and what needs to be done about them, and explained it in a way where you were like, well, duh.
Well, right, and that's what I think he's so good at. And actually, in a quote from his from this interview that I pulled, he said, quote, people are hurting, and it's important for leadership now to explain to them why they are hurting and how we can grow the middle class and reverse the economic decline of so many people. And I don't think that is the politics of Senator yeah. Clinton or the Democratic establishment.
Well, it's not.
And he's absolutely
they're
right.
They're obscuring everything.
He couldn't be more right. Yeah. I mean, that's...
And that's the thing. That's a point that everyone knows. That's not... It's not like people are walking around being like, why is everything in chaos? It's... Like,
right.
everyone understands that part of the sort of, like, political game that these people play is to sort of, like, obscure the point.
Well, and as much sort of, like, you know, more people now than ever identify themselves as independent. More people now are claim to be upset with the two-party system. Mm-hmm. More people now have an intense hatred of the sort of, like, you know, the tension in Congress. I think that they're sort mm-hmm. of, like... You know, I mean, I'm sure this has been said over the years on many occasions, so
right.
I don't, you know, this is probably not profound, but it seems like now is a time for Bernie Sanders. I'm not saying he's going to be the president in 2016, but
no.
like, I mean...
But this is, I'm saying, what I am saying is that we have been waiting a long time for a far-left candidate to, a high-profile far-left candidate to jump into the primary field.
Right.
And that is... You know, whether or not he chooses to run as an independent, he's essentially going to be running, you know, sort of like in opposition to the Democratic platform as it stands with a Hillary Clinton type candidate.
Right.
And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
We're looking for someone to sort of make it clear that there is a voting base in that, you know, on the far left or just in the sort of populist field
yeah.
that is looking for a home and isn't finding it in either party.
Yeah. Agreed.
So... Moving on
to Bernie.
Moving on to crazies.
Oh my God! I know
CPAC
was this week,
like a
gift from God. CPAC.
Every time CPAC happens, it always takes me by surprise. I never pay attention to when CPAC is gonna be.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it hits the news, first of all, every photo that comes out of CPAC is hilarious, and I can't explain why. I can't put my finger.
Right.
It's like a convention of crazy eye people.
Oh,
just
yeah,
like
totally.
All in the room together,
well, the first,
making each other nuts.
The first picture I saw, because I think it was from the first day, was when Mitch McConnell came out to Tom Coburn and walked out onto
oh,
stage
yes.
with the rifle
yeah.
to give to him, basically.
A gift
so, like,
rifle.
I mean, that's...
I
so,
was
like,
thinking, like, I don't know why... I'm not bothered by the fact that, like, you know, Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and Donald Trump were all at CPAC. It bothers me that Mitch McConnell was at CPAC.
Oh, yeah.
Like Tom Coburn's even a little crazy. Fine.
Yeah. All the important people were there.
I hate when I'm reminded that, like, people who are responsible for things are also going to CPAC.
No.
I don't want to see Mitch McConnell at CPAC.
I know.
And Sarah Palin can go talk to herself, talk to a crowd at CPAC to her heart's content for all I care.
Right.
I mean,
and
I
she does. We'll have a clip of it in a second.
Exactly. But I mean, like, I'm not trying to have, like, actual responsible elected officials who are not just of, like, Tom Coburn level of just obstructionism.
He's the minority leader in
you know,
the Senate. Chris Christie was there. He's the head of the Republican
like,
Governors Association.
Like
don't be at CPAC.
Be at CPAC? Oh my God. Chris Christie, by the way, not the next president.
Not by their standards.
No, they, you know, they have their straw poll. That's
yes.
their big CPAC straw poll is one of the most exciting straw polls out
right.
there.
Rand Paul won it
what
going
a shock.
Away.
What
31%.
A shock.
Ted Cruz 11.
Cruz.
Ben Carson, neurosurgeon Ben Carson,
yes.
9%. Chris Christie, 8%. Scott Walker and
yeah,
Rick Santorum.
He beat Scott Walker and Rick Santorum.
Yeah, tied at 7%. Marco Rubio, 6%. He got second last year. Marco
yeah,
Rubio, by
fallen
the way.
From grace.
Big time. Paul Ryan and Rick Perry at 3%. And then Bobby Jindal, Condoleezza Rice, Mike Huckabee, and Sarah Palin at 2%.
I mean.
It's an odd
poor
election.
Mike. Mike
I know.
I would think Mike Huckabee is crazy enough to do well at CPAC.
I still
I
feel like, I mean, this obviously doesn't
well, this
mean
is
anything.
Meaningless.
But I mean, like, although... It's interesting to me that Rand Paul won by such a large margin,
yeah.
and I know that I have talked a lot about thinking that Mike Huckabee is sort of, like, going to be the guy in 2016, and still a long ways off, and I still think he'll do well in some of the early primary states, but it is interesting to me how Rand Paul seems to has really worked at broadening his message. He is doing the least amount of crazy talking that he has ever done in his career. Yeah. And I think
that's hard because his eyes don't lie.
He's crazy. So like for him to sort of not be crazy talking, it just takes a lot of focus on his part, basically. But I mean, like, he really sort of like is sounding like a person who could be a presidential candidate from a major party. Yeah. I wouldn't have said that literally 6 months ago.
No.
Because I just would have thought that he was, like, too nuts. The thing that I think is going to be interesting for how the next 2 years plays out, like, what happens in Russia, what happens sort of, like, you know, with whatever's going, ends up happening in Iran. This is where he sort of, like, really falls off the rails with, like, the people who are voting in conservative primary states.
And because it's interesting because I mean, I feel like, you know, the sort of next runner-up is sort of like the most sort of deluded, crazy of the bunch in a way that is complete opposite of Rand Paul.
Yes, exactly.
Rand Paul has a lot of nutty ideas, but he's very much about... He's almost an isolationist when it comes to foreign policy.
Very nearly,
you know, I mean, he doesn't... He doesn't think we should be involved in
we'll
all these
things.
And I think we're... Yeah, he's going to have to evolve.
We'll see him tinker with that a little
bit. He's going to have to evolve.
Sort of, yeah.
But, you know, he's been very... He's come out accidentally, maybe, but... has very strongly against drone programs and, you know, a lot of the sort of, you know, the information gathering that the NSA is doing and stuff like that. That's all stuff that, like, has sort of become part of the Republican message because of him almost.
Right.
Because otherwise, Republicans love things like drones and sneaking and reading your email.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, too. They were talking on Meet the Press this morning when they were sort of, like, talking about the results of this, is when you talk to sort of, like, young people who don't... you know, claim to belong to either political party, is that you hear the things that they're sort of like most upset with is the NSA spying. They're sort of like most sort of like not wanting to be involved in like all of these wars around the world. And so he sort of has to like walk this sort of like dangerous line because like he obviously needs his base who like want to just bomb everyone who's like even, you know, up for bombing.
Right.
And, but the people who sort of like also really sort of like, you know, the people who, like, where he gets his bread buttered.
The people he's inherited from his father are libertarians.
Right, exactly.
They're not trying to get involved in bombing every country under the sun.
No.
He is the only Republican in that field that does not stand for bombing every country under the sun.
Right.
And, you know, he's going to have to start talking about that more, but he's done a lot of talking about it. It's not like he's been totally silent on these issues.
No, not at
all. He's come out mostly on issues like, you know, on foreign policy issues, on issues like the NSA spying and drone programs and things like that. So it's not like conservatives haven't had a chance to know what he's up to.
Right. I think
that there is a sort of newly libertarian streak that is a response to some of the craziness that's going on in the Tea Party, even though Rand Paul sort of is vaguely Tea Party-ish. But it's a response to some of the most hateful rhetoric that's come out of the Tea Party. I think that people are starting to sort of, like, get a little scared about that. And so there's sort of, like, a slight libertarian bent that is about to take off in the Republican Party. Which is, in my opinion, way less destructive than what they've been up to.
Right.
I mean, libertarians make me nuts because, as I always say, you need roads. But...
But if...
That's a much less annoying thing for them to be up to than for them to just be trying to bomb everyone.
But if a libertarian streak takes someone like Rand Paul all the way to the presidency, I would be able to sleep better at night knowing that's what had happened as opposed to some terrible, Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or even on some level, Chris Christie, who I think is just a little status quo-y.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think he's a loon
in a very different way.
Right. I'm not going to vote for Rand Paul. I mean, don't get it twisted, people.
No.
But I'm just saying that, like, you know, I mean, if that's the
message that seizes the Republican Party,
then
we're in better hands than the message that they had previously, which was just to kill everyone.
Correct.
Everyone. If you were not white and male and straight, they wanted you dead.
Yeah.
And currently, I feel like they might be more of a live and let live kind of
person. Well, I think what he's been smartly doing, too, is that on foreign policy, as opposed to at least recently sort of like talking about what he actually believes, is just criticizing the president.
Yeah.
Which is a winning strategy.
Right. They love that.
Yeah.
That's the CPAC voters are not, they're not trying to listen to reason and messages, but they are trying to talk about how much they hate the president.
No.
So that's a smart move for him.
Yeah. But there were, of course, some glorious moments. CPAC always, and this is just sort of a smattering of them. We missed some of them, certainly, but some other great things happened at CPAC. Donald Trump gave a speech where he referenced the late, great Jimmy Carter. who was very much
alive. Of Jimmy Carters that are alive. Of the alive Jimmy Carters.
Oh, God.
Hasn't heard. So he didn't know about that.
Mm-mm. I mean, he's old.
He's not a young guy. No. But he is one of the few living presidents. He's one of the living presidents. It's not hard to remember who they are.
Yes.
Well, we talked about the shotgun thing, but there was also a moment where Michelle Bachmann called the Tea Party an intellectual movement.
Mm, yes. There's a very famous conservative radio host whose name is Michael Medved, and he was hosting a panel called Can Libertarians and Social Conservatives Ever Get Along? Well, that's an interesting panel. It's based on what you and I were just talking about. And he was quoted at that panel saying, there has never been a state in this country that has banned gay marriage.
So he doesn't know much about things.
There have actually been almost 30 states that have banned gay marriage. So he's actually...
It's been a pretty high number.
The majority of the country has banned gay marriage. So
he's a man who hasn't heard a lot about what's going on out there.
Hasn't, no.
Can't know.
Doesn't get out much, Michael Medved.
The highlight, in my opinion, was a moment that we're not going to try to relay to you. We're going to play you a clip. This is Sarah Palin speaking to CPAC.
I do not like this. Uncle Sam, I do not like his healthcare scam. I do not like these dirty crooks or how they lie and cook the books. I do not like when Congress steals. I do not like their crony deals. I do not like this spying, man. I do not like, oh yes we can, I...
Oh boy.
So that was that.
That was that. I love that because, like, it has that sort of, like, I mean, she always sounds like a crazy person, but there's, like, something about, like, crazy Republican women voices.
And I don't
want to, like, it does. Like, that's what, I don't want to, like, you know, I'm not trying to sound sexist here, but, like, there's, like, remember that clip, like, a year or so ago of, like, Michelle Bachmann that, like, got played where she was, like, doing, like, the prayer breakfast thing or whatever, and she was like, oh, Jehovah God. And she, like, went into, like, this weird, like, crazy, like, kids voice that sounded like she was, like, channeling some, like, sort of other being or something. Yeah. Like, this very much sort of, like, had this kind of vibe to it. And it's just sort of, like, it's like that's not Sarah Palin's actual speaking voice.
No, it's not her speaking voice. And also, she dove into about three other speaking voices from the fake speaking voice she was using to deliver. I mean, she's nothing if not a performer, but a crazy performer who doesn't, who we're not laughing along with.
No.
My the Oh Yes We Can.
Oh,
where,
God.
Like...
Yeah.
I just can't even.
No.
I can't. I don't have the words for it. But in any case, that was, I think, the CPAC highlight.
It certainly was.
And an intellectual movement, if ever there was one.
Yes. Yep.
In news that is just planning to endlessly frustrate me until the end of time, it's like they can't postpone the keep your own health plan thing enough.
No. They postponed it a year because everybody was, like, spiraling out of control
about
it.
Right, they were going to lose their terrible junk plan.
And so they postponed it for a year, and what they've now realized is that because...
They couldn't do math a year ago, unfortunately.
Right, they postponed it for a year, which they felt like was going to get them past the midterms, which was obviously the goal in the first place, because they felt like Democrats were, like, going to hurt from this.
Right.
But what happens is that insurance companies have to send out notifications 90 days before to, like, notify people that their plans are, which was sort of, like, the problem in the first place, is that when these notifications went out and everybody, panicked. So that 90-day takes us to, like, October, which is, like, a couple days before people are trying to have a midterm election. So they just postponed it for another year. Yeah, screw it.
Yeah, why not? Just keep going. Who cares? Yeah. So in 15 years from now, when we finally get rid of these terrible junk plans under President Martian, like...
Yeah, I know.
Maybe we can finally have a functioning healthcare system.
Right.
But until
it's still up to the states.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, California has already said, like, screw off with your extension because we're not having it. So, I'm all for that. I'm glad about that.
There are times that I'm really happy to live in a state that's the size of a large nation.
Right.
These are those times.
Yeah.
We can
ignore the federal government when we want
to.
Screw them.
Yeah. We're not trying to care.
No. Do whatever the hell we want.
They take our money. We can do anything we want.
Yeah.
But this is extremely frustrating, if only because if they had just postponed it for 2 years in the first place, I would have been annoyed, but I would have forgotten by now. But the fact that this has had to be in the press twice just makes them look like more failure-ish than they did before.
Right. It's a little upsetting that they didn't figure out this the first time.
God.
But I am glad on some level that if they were going to do it they at least figured it out in March.
That's true. Because they weren't just like, oh, it's July, so let's figure
right. this out. Right. Or, like, oh, shit, these notifications just right. went out the first week of October, and now we're really fucked in the midterm. You know what I mean? Like, at least.
I mean, I think one of the things that was supposed to be different, though, about this happening in a year from when it originally happened, was that at the time that this started happening in the first place, no one could get on the exchanges, no one knew what it was going to look like when we all had to buy our own health insurance,
right.
no one knew what the plans would cover, no one had been under an Obamacare plan before, and now the press from people who have actually already gotten their Obamacare plans sorted out
right.
is relatively good. Well, people are pretty happy with the system. So if the notifications went out, you know, in a year from now or whenever, or right. a year from October or whenever it was, I don't think the press would have been quite the same as it was no. back when the website didn't work and everyone was having to panic.
What I wish they really would have done, and I think they didn't really know what to do because the website wasn't working, and I think there were still like a lot of unanswered questions about yeah. how this was going to all roll out. I think what the better, in hindsight, plan would have been, like, okay, we're not canceling these in terms of like, you won't have healthcare insurance at the first of the year. What they should have done was let these people keep their plans
until they signed up for the
until the end of open enrollment, which yes. is coming up at the end of March. I think that would have been, they would have, because then these people still would have had,
healthcare.
What, 5 or 6 months?
Yeah.
And they still would have had healthcare until they just got another plan. As opposed to, like, now 2 years later, they're going to have, like, their terrible plans. And that screws over the whole system when they yeah. get to keep these plans.
The insurance
like,
it's companies not, are it's screwed not, over by that
no,
as well.
Of course.
Like, everyone is screwed.
It isn't helping anyone.
No.
It's certainly not helping people with these awful plans that now they're keeping.
No.
I mean,
it's just it's helping them have subpar health insurance, which yeah. is apparently what people are out for at the moment, because that seems to be what we keep aiming for.
Right.
It's like it's not subpar enough. Let's figure out a way to make it worse.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So this is an interesting story yeah. that happened this week. because there was, President Obama had one of his appointments to a spot at in the Justice Department, which his name is, oh, God, can I say this name?
It's something, it's like Debo Adgabile.
Good work. I'm yeah. glad that I forced that upon
he was Mumia Abu-Jamal's lawyer
right exactly who was
it's it, a name you maybe have seen 10 years ago
right who was on death row for I think he shooting a police officer
yeah,
right
this, or this was like I mean if you were an activist in 1999 or whenever it was you definitely yeah. talked endlessly about Mumia. Free Mumia was like
sure.
the thing to be into yeah. when I was in high school. He was on yeah. death row for a very long time. I think he's still on death row, isn't he?
Oh, I'm actually not even sure.
But he was convicted for killing a police officer in Philadelphia. It was a very suspect case. There were a lot of reasons why it seemed like there had been racially motivated, the trial, you know, his sentence had been racially motivated and things like that.
Right.
So, in any case, this guy represented him.
Right, but the thing is that he did represent him, but he represented him when he joined the NAACP Legal Defense and Education yeah. Fund in 2012, who was already right. representing him.
So he just happened to join a civil rights organization, that was already representing a guy who had been convicted of murder in suspicious circumstances.
Right. He got a job representing this person, probably unknowingly at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that he necessarily even got this job thinking that he was going to be like, oh, yeah. well, now I'm going to have to be like doing it. Maybe he did. I have no idea. It's irrelevant,
if
really.
If you were a young civil rights lawyer, that would be a dream.
That's where you want to work. You want to
work
at the end.
This is a really high-profile murder case. It has a lot, you know, it addresses a lot of issues that have to do with racism, that have to do with the death penalty. It is probably the most high-profile death row inmate. Mumia Abu-Jamal has written extensively while he's been in jail, so there's a lot of documentation of the case. Like, the whole
right.
It would be a dream job for a civil yeah. rights lawyer. So even if he hadn't known,
right.
there's no reason to penalize someone for wanting a dream job.
Right. Well, and obviously, so this guy has the pedigree to be able
yes.
to do this, because the job that he was going to be doing at the DOJ is the
Civil Rights Division.
And so, and I think he was going to be working on voting, actually, too,
yeah.
was
yeah.
what his thing was. And so, obviously, like, he has the resume to be doing this.
Right.
Unfortunately, because of his past as a person who was doing their job,
right.
he, all the Republicans and 7 loser asshole
who douchebag Democrats. We're not going to deign to call them Democrats at the moment.
No.
We're going to call them just assholes.
Assholes.
This is the asshole party.
Voted with all of the Republicans, and it wasn't even close. It was like 42 to 57 down.
Like,
on this.
Do they get brownie points for this? Because no one even knows who the fuck this guy is. If you are some idiot sitting in North Dakota who doesn't pay attention to the news, you don't know who Mumia is. You don't
yeah.
know who his lawyer, who you can't pronounce. I can't even pronounce the name of the lawyer, so certainly you're not going to be able to as a random North Dakotan.
Right.
Like, there's no reason that anybody would need to vote in any way on this other than fine.
Well, and it's a really sort of like, first off, all of the people in the Senate are lawyers.
Yeah.
Like, basically.
Literally.
So, and except a lot
for,
of people...
Except for I'm an ophthalmologist here and there, whatever.
And one would think that in the Justice Department, a lot of people are probably lawyers, too.
Yeah,
because
think.
Working in the Justice Department,
that's,
you would probably have been
pretty,
a lawyer
at
some point.
That's a pretty law-ish kind of job.
Law-ish job.
Yeah.
And it's... And the, you know, the Bar Association and various other organizations were, like, really against him not getting the votes for this because they were really upset because they felt like it set a really terrible precedent because, like, he was basically punished for representing someone as a lawyer. Like, that's what you do.
By the way, as a lawyer, you represent people for money. That's what you do.
That's
there are a lot of lawyers that are representing convicted murderers
especially
because everyone gets a lawyer.
Especially as a defense attorney. Everybody, yeah, exactly. It's part of America.
Yeah. It's not, if you are a lawyer whose job it is to represent a known serial killer, you're not, like, necessarily an evil person just because you thought that this some idiot who'd murdered a million people deserved a defense.
Right.
Everyone deserves a defense. That's the premise that lawyerdom is based on.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other reason why, at least it made me so angry, is that because I think it just sort of, like, because it's to an Eric Holder DOJ, that's who would have been his boss. It's a civil rights position.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is an African American. It just it reeked of sort of like having this sort of like, and when you look at the list of Democrats who voted with the Republicans, it's a suspect list.
One of
it's
the whiter lists out
it's
there.
It's Mark Pryor from Arkansas. It's John Walsh from Montana. It's Joe Manchin from West Virginia. It's Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota. It's a list that when you look at the people on this list, sort of like reeks of having a potential other agenda.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is why I think that the vote was so upsetting. Would someone for a different position of a different race representing someone who didn't kill a police officer have had the same sort of treatment in this situation? And I don't...
Of course not.
So that's what was upsetting.
Well, I mean, I think what has been interesting about a lot of these appointments, about a lot of the way that this Congress and the Senate have dealt with Obama, is that because we have elected this African-American president, I feel like a lot of really overt racism has come out in terms of how we've treated his policies.
Yeah.
Because suddenly we can do that because we're a post-racial society because we elected a black man to be president. And
exactly.
That's not, like...
It's given us the opportunity to be racist
right.
now.
Exactly. Like, we're suddenly, like, okay with that because we... They can always be like, well, we have...
No, we're not racist.
President's black.
Yeah.
What do you mean we don't like black... This has obviously had an agenda, a racist agenda.
Yeah.
There's not any other way to view this situation. The only people who don't think that Mumia deserves better treatment are racists anyway, because the whole case is wrapped up in racism. That's the whole reason that was such a big deal in the first place.
Right.
I mean, and every death row case that has come along has essentially been about racism more than any other issue. That's one of the issues with death row. So, I mean, my mind is always boggled by this sort of thing, only because the racist agenda isn't just like sort of this nefarious thing they were up to. It's like overt. It's like a totally overt racist agenda that these people are taking on.
And the winning loser is Heidi Heitkamp.
Throw her in a well.
I hate her anyway.
She's horrible.
Terrible. She's super, you know, she's one of these like Democrats who like...
She's a Republican Democrat.
She's a Republican. She's, you know, we talked a lot about her when she was like, you know, she's very pro-gun. Like, she was, like, real
she's always
in,
making
in bed
dumb
with
comments
the NRA,
about
like,
guns.
After... Right. Like, that's sort of, like, her thing. She's from North Dakota, so she represents, like, 12 people and cattle. So, she, later in the same day, sent out a fundraising email where she was fundraising off the importance of having the right to vote and civil rights. Like, civil rights in voting, basically. Which is what this guy would have been overseeing in the Justice Department.
Infuriating.
It's like, you fucking bitch. I said it.
Yeah. She deserved it.
You're an evil woman.
She's an evil woman.
Screw off.
Yeah.
Just elect a Republican from North Dakota.
Well, this infuriates me when states are up to this kind of... I feel this way about Joe Manchin a lot of the time. And
I do too.
I mean, mostly everyone on this list, actually, now that I'm looking at it. But, like, I feel like a lot of the time... Remember when Ben Nelson almost destroyed healthcare?
Yeah.
He was a Democrat who was
He and Joe Lieberman were both destroying healthcare.
Yeah. And Lieberman, I feel like, finally gave up the ghost. The man's not a Democrat. He's a Republican.
Never was.
He never was, and now we know it, because he's not a Democrat. Or, you know, when he finally left office, it was as an independent because he was not a Democrat anymore. But I sort of feel like these are the types of sneaky, is she that different than, like, an Olympia Snow? You know, right. There are moderate Republicans that are more moderate than her on a lot of issues.
Yeah, totally. And
I just sort of, like, I don't want to have to include her in the coalition if she's going to be such a bitch.
No, screw off.
I don't want to have to include Joe Manchin in the coalition if he's going to be such a jerk.
No, we don't need you.
Like, I just don't need these people.
No.
I want different people.
Yeah. Different people.
I want different people in the coalition.
Yeah.
I'm sick of these losers.
Ditto.
Bunch of nonsense going on there.
Speaking of coalitions.
Oh, my God.
This was an
interesting. There's a weird one.
Here's a weird one. And it's upsetting because our dearest Tracy Flick, Tracy Flick of the Senate, Kirsten Gillibrand, we've talked a lot about her sexual assault bill.
Yeah.
It went down.
Yeah.
We sort of thought that it was going to, although up until the very last minute,
it was,
nobody really knew. Because there were like 6 or 7 Republicans who sort of like wouldn't sort of like say on record whether they supported it. Mark Warner of Virginia wasn't saying, and a lot of,
and
basically
it seemed like
most
some of those ones who weren't saying because they were going to vote for it.
Right, I know.
They weren't not saying because they didn't want to vote. It was the type of people who would not say so that they could vote for it, but do it sort of sneaky at the last minute.
But it was the weirdest collection of people that voted for this. It went down 55 to 45. It was one of these sort of procedural things, so it needed 60 votes.
Right.
So, but 10 Republicans voted for it, including some of the craziest ones
out there. 10 of the craziest Republicans. Right. It wasn't just any old Republican.
No. Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, some other nutbags, but like those are sort of like the three nuttiest of nutbags.
There's not other nutty people in the Senate really that are less. No. Those are the ringleaders of nutdom.
That's it right there. They voted with this, and then some of the like hawkish Democrats voted against it. Like
Claire McCaskill,
and she's got like some competing bills, so she's just got her sort of like
she's
own
got
self-preservation.
Her own
yeah, exactly.
The
self-preservation.
Angus King voted against it.
Who's an independent from Maine? Carl Levin voted against it, and he's the Armed Services Committee chairman. Like, what's he doing voting against this? Like, he's with McCaskill on this other sort of like
competing
bill.
They're having some sort of. But yeah, it was such a weird.
It was an odd
situation.
Weird bedfellows.
It was the kind of situation that I feel like only Kirsten Gillibrand could have created too.
Right.
Because she can get anyone to do what she wants them to do. She doesn't have all the time in the world probably, so she didn't have time to personally nag every person in the Senate about this bill. But like, I fully believe that if she needed to get Ted Cruz to vote on a bill that was exactly what Obamacare is.
And she had a year to do it.
And she had a year to do it. He would be voting for that bill at the end of the year. He would not dare cross
her.
He would be trying to avoid her
in the halls of the Senate. But
if he wanted his life back, he would vote for that fucking bill.
Right.
So I feel like if she had all the time in the world, she could get anything passed.
Yeah, I agree.
With limited time, she probably had to focus on some, you know, the important people.
Yeah, she was, yeah, exactly.
But the fact that she got Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul together on a bill with her.
Like, that's
like
something.
Some real confusing.
But the interesting, like, not only did it sort of like, you know, create these like strange bedfellows, but it also sort of like had like you were hearing like weird things this week because Gillibrand sort of like, you know, she didn't want to come out too harsh, I don't think, but the president was sort of silent on this. He has talked vaguely about like this needing to be like a thing that needs to be addressed, but he never really sort of like came out in favor of this bill. And she sort of like she wasn't going to be too mean about it because she probably felt like she couldn't
be. In a kind of roundabout way, she was like, if he had said something, that would have
helped. But Ted Cruz
got really on Obama's case.
He said, "I will note there's been a complete absence of leadership on this issue from President Obama," which sounds like something that he would say, but it doesn't sound like something that he would say
while
in an attempt to help get something a bill that Kirsten Gillibrand wrote passed. Like, Ted Cruz wanted the president's help to get Gillibrand's vote passed.
This is,
like,
that's
a mind bender right there. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
This has just been the craziest bill situation. She's good at sussing out those issues, though. And she's also good at making it impossible for the president to not comment on an issue that he's trying desperately not to comment on. That's how you get something like Don't Ask, Don't Tell ended.
Well, right. Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, is you get some weird people to get together on something, and then you just sort of, you sort of make it clear that this is the wave of the future.
Right.
And once you've made that clear, then the president has to talk about it. I don't think this issue is going to go away necessarily. I mean, it's not going to go away in the long term, obviously, because sexual assault in the military is not going to go away.
Right.
But I mean, I don't think that she's going to sort of like give up the ghost on this.
No,
I think
she will
she's
either.
Probably regrouping right now. But she has such a, it's a much more interesting coalition than I would imagine the McCaskill bill has.
probably.
Screw Claire McCaskill's bill.
Right.
I couldn't be less interested in that.
No.
It sounds like a boring bill.
It does.
If anyone is going to get the president to sort of like make a comment about this, I trust that it's Kirsten Gillibrand.
I agree.
Or Ted Cruz. Or Ted Cruz. Look, if they were working together, I can't even imagine what kind of success we might have. If we could get together with Ted Cruz on some stuff, we'd own America.
No, totally.
That's for everyone.
Yeah. On a completely different subject.
Right.
This is Lila and the Pope on the same page.
Rare, but true. It's happening.
It's happening.
This is it.
Because the Pope, in an interview, basically came out with the exact same position on Lila as, not necessarily gay marriage, but at least in terms of civil unions.
Civil union. So we mean civil union in the sense that the state can marry people, not, you know, we use the term marriage and civil union here interchangeably to mean the state marriage, but we're talking about civil union as the state's, you know, sort of answer to unioning people.
Right.
And marriage is like a church thing.
Right. Because you have always said, like, there's no reason where two people sort of, like, can't join together to sort of, like,
any old people.
Right. Yeah.
Sisters. I don't care. Like, any people.
Right. To be able to have, you know, be able to share their assets. To be able. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm still out there arguing for plural marriage if people are into it. I don't give a shit. If seven people want to get married and join assets, like, who am I to stop them? They can do whatever they want.
Right. Well, and the Pope isn't, apparently.
The Pope
going
also
to stop them. Yeah.
Yeah. The Pope also believes that in a live and let live type situation.
Yeah.
You know, he said that states seek to sort of regularize different situations of living together, and that we have to look at the different cases and evaluate them in their variety.
Mm-hmm. Their variety. Yeah. Any variety.
Any variety.
Any old variety.
He probably doesn't believe in the extent of variety that I am advocating
not.
For.
No.
I'm often having, like, dyed-in-the-wool, like, far-left progressives gasp at my marriage suggestions.
Yeah. I know.
Like, I mean, I give Brent a lot of credit because he has never gasped at my suggestions
at
all. And I mean, if I know anyone who probably is sort of like from a tradition of, you know, traditional marriages, it's Brent. Like, you know, my own family wasn't necessarily having the most traditional marriages, you know.
Sure.
So I'm shocked always when someone on the way far left who has been living in New York City La La Land anyway is like shocked and appalled by and, you know, sort of like concerned about my crazy suggestions. I think they're not that crazy. I think they're pretty reasonable.
I know. I want to share my assets with Ray Ray.
Yeah. And who's to stop you?
She might not want to share them with me. I have no idea.
She doesn't have any assets.
I know.
She's getting free assets if she marries you. I don't see why that would be a bad deal for her.
No. She wins in that deal.
Yeah, exactly. She may not know it because she's crazy. But I mean, like, just the idea that the Vatican could recognize sort of the distinction between a sort of state contract and a religious marriage, which is a completely separate idea. Because you can decide that your God only recognizes whatever you feel like. If your God only recognizes marriages between chimpanzees, I don't care. Think whatever you want. The sort of issue is that state marriage is a completely separate type of thing, and it's about assets entirely. It has nothing to do with God and, you know, belief. And so for the Pope to recognize that, this Pope is really... My mom was saying that she read some article about how Lent is really popular this year because everyone likes the Pope.
Yeah, so, he's like the rock star
he's
Pope.
He's like a rock star Pope. So suddenly everyone is doing Lent this year. Like, someone, everyone got real religious. This is, the Catholic Church were fools to not do this years ago.
Right?
What were they doing letting that Nazi sit in there for so long?
I don't know.
Like, and I'm very anti-Nazi this week because I just read a book about World War II.
No, you did.
And every time I read a book about World War II, I mean, everyone knows the Nazis were evil, obviously. But it sort of like re-hits me that they were a kind of like level of evil that you can't just in your everyday life imagine anyone could be.
Right. Well, that
they spent years planning for a way to actively commit a genocide. They didn't just like, it didn't just like come to them like, oh, we're just going to commit a genocide because Jews are in our way and we want to get rid of them because we love ourselves. They like spent years planning it. Someone, like, at no point was anyone like, you know what? It'd be easier if we just didn't kill all the Jews.
Right.
It'd be just easier for us.
Yeah.
It would be better for the German people if we didn't have to go through the trouble and expense of killing all of these Jews.
If we put all our assets into taking over Europe.
Yeah.
We might really be onto something.
Yeah, exactly.
But no.
But no. We're going to waste all this time and energy coming up with a way to commit a genocide. That is a level of crazy.
Right.
That's beyond crazy.
Well, and a genocide is, I would assume, hard work.
Well, this is what shocks me every time I read one of these World War II books, is because that's the thing that, like, history books can't really give you a sort of good rundown on. Like, they talk about all of the sort of extensive evil things that Nazis were up to, and you're like, all right, well, that sounds relatively evil. Yeah, I could see how these people were kind of evil. But in your mind, you don't really conceive of, like, how hard, like, how much work genocide is. And, like, I read it one book, and it was a fiction book, so this, but it was, like, I think a relatively well-researched fiction book, and what I just read was nonfiction. But, like, about how many different plans and strategies they had to go through to figure out how to kill all the Jews.
Yeah.
Because they were first trying to do it by firing squad, and it got exhausting. They literally didn't have the manpower to keep up with the Jewish population.
Right.
So they were like, and it was like causing everyone to have nervous breakdowns because murdering people for 8 hours a day is an exhausting and, you know, sort of terrifying thing to find yourself doing.
But the average person would be like, maybe we just stop doing that.
Maybe if this isn't going to work, let's think of something else. But they, when instead of they're thinking of something else, was like, really? Maybe we'll drive them around in trucks and asphyxiate them. Like, they just like came up with every sick, ridiculous thing, and not just to like torture individual people, like a lot of regimes in South America and other parts of the world have done. Where, and you know, that's certainly a level of evil that I can't imagine either. But that's a time when you're sort of like, well, this individual has information that he's blah, 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 and so I feel justified in torturing this individual. And you sort of see how brainwashed people arrive at that logic.
Yeah.
The Nazis were doing something on a scale that, like, I just can't even figure out the logic that got them to arrive there.
No, you
that,
can't. Like, that, if you like, could, I wouldn't want to know you.
No. It's because even if the rest of Germany was being kept in the dark about the sort of extent of these activities, so many people had to be involved in this and had to sign off on it in order to make it happen because it was such a large-scale operation that you have to assume that everyone there had a touch of evil.
Yeah, they did.
Anyway, I've been talking about it all week because I'm just always flabbergasted by how evil the Nazis were.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you're just always shocked to remember.
Yeah. Well, it's shocking when you realize in any genocide situation, when you really think about how hard it is to commit a genocide.
Right.
You really have to actively try. You can't, genocide doesn't happen because it's the easiest route.
No,
you can't half-ass a genocide.
No, you can't.
In any case.
Oh, God. Jobs numbers. Ugh. It's our monthly time.
Fiction time.
Lila goes, I'm not going to read this. You can just talk about it. We're not even going to talk much about it. No. We'll just give you the numbers because next month we'll tell you that the numbers were lies.
Right.
And then because we're going to tell you about how all the other numbers got adjusted from way back in freaking December, for God's sake. Like, nobody knows. They're arbitrary numbers, so we'll tell them to you. Right. And then you can do with them what you will.
Right. So, just hopefully nothing because they're fake. They mean nothing.
The economy in February added 175,000 jobs. Or half a million, or negative 12. It's unclear as to how many. But we claim 175,000. Right. The unemployment rate went up to 6.7%. Why? Unclear.
No.
Analysts expected 149,000 jobs.
No, so we did really well in terms of fake numbering.
Until next month we revise them down, probably. Right,
we only added 12.
But we had upward revisions for December and January for an extra 25,000 jobs. So it's unclear, and more people went into long-term unemployed, 200,000 people in February, and if we had 200,000 people go into long-term unemployment, which is why they say that the number has been continued to go down, and we added 175,000 jobs, and then we added an extra 25,000 jobs from the revised December and January numbers, I'm curious as to how we went up to 6.7. I really don't understand these. I don't think they're meant to be understood. No. I don't think that they're meant to be factual, obviously, but anyway, it was news this week. People were talking about
it. The economy is fake and so are jobs numbers.
Yep.
That's all. I'm sticking to that story.
Yep, exactly. Oh, God, this is an interesting one.
Yeah.
California is potentially looking to ban orca shows at SeaWorld.
Yeah. That's like big news here in California.
That's big news.
And it's in response pretty directly to the film Blackfish.
Well, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. So, not just pretty directly. No, all the way directly.
Right. Whoever wrote this bill saw Blackfish.
And everyone that voted for it was like, I should see Blackfish. Yeah. This is sort of interesting because SeaWorld is a major tourist attraction here.
Big time, yeah. It's in San Diego.
San Diego is a big animal attraction of sorts because the zoo is there.
That's where you sort of like go to have your...
That's the only thing to do there, really. Is you can drink a lot and then you can go to the zoo.
Yeah.
By the way, it costs sort of literally $1 trillion to go to the San Diego Zoo.
Oh,
it is the most expensive admission to a zoo I've ever heard of in my entire life.
Interesting. A lot of zoos are free.
Yeah.
Because they're funded by the state a lot of times.
Yeah. The San Diego Zoo is bringing it, and hopefully it's bringing in a big profit, and hopefully it's paying taxes, but it's probably not doing those things. But I feel like residents of California should get to go for free.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like.
Have you seen Blackfish?
No.
I mean,
I'm not trying to see Blackfish. Animal cruelty videos don't sit well with me.
Well, they don't sit well with me either. And a lot of times, like, you know, I sort of hate to say this because, like, I feel like it makes me feel like less of a, you know, big, huge, like, tree hugging liberal. But, right. Like, had I not seen Blackfish and had I heard about this bill, my first response would have been like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, but some serious shit is going on with the killer whales at the SeaWorld parks. Like, this is, I'm for this. And if that makes me like a giant, you know, wacko, like nut job, Republican sort of like animal rights nut activist, like, then that's fine. Because, like, if you haven't seen it, you don't know. And if you've seen it, you know. Because it's some shit.
I don't want to see it because of the fear that I will never be able to unknow what I'll know after seeing it.
Yeah. But you certainly won't ever want to go to SeaWorld again.
I've never been to SeaWorld, so won't bother me.
Because up until I saw that, I was like, I would, you know, we're so close to San Diego. Why don't we go to SeaWorld sometime? Going to SeaWorld would be fun. I am in favor of not just them
closing
banning
SeaWorld.
Just shut it down.
Yeah.
Shut it the fuck down. Like, because it is ungood what's going on at SeaWorld. Like, that's the word.
Considering how much discussion about Blackfish has gone on in when did it get released? Like last year?
Yeah, fairly recently.
It's a fairly recent film. Everyone's constantly talking about Blackfish, so I believe that it was a disturbing film that I therefore am not going to see.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
Because of fear.
Trust me.
But I also sort of, I get where you're coming from with your initial sentiment that if you hadn't seen Blackfish.
Right,
you,
I mean, it seems like one of those things
I sometimes get annoyed.
Like,
I care about ecosystems. So I care about sort of like making, because I care about climate change. So I care about making sure that like crazy shit isn't going on with the environment. But a lot of the time I think we sort of like, well, like if we'll start advocating for like saving puppies, but we like won't give healthcare to people.
Well, that's,
sort of like,
I mean,
can't we focus on sort of like some, you know, can we focus our limited funding on things that help people? Right. If we're not willing to do that, can we really get all worked up about
puppies? Well, there was
how I often feel about
that's how I am too.
That
and
kind
like,
of advocacy.
And also, I just feel like a lot of times it goes too far. I mean, I was sort of, you know, caught a lot of flack amongst my sort of like crazy, like, you know, liberal friends in when California had that proposition where we were going to have to like let the chickens have like a freaking certain
space.
Amount of hokey pokey space. And I was like, I'm going to eat the fuckers. I don't care how much square feet they have to like run around because they're about to have their heads cut off and then I'm going to cook them. So, and I know that's sort of like, you know, I'm sure people are listening and being like, oh, well, you're a terrible person, but I don't really give a flying fuck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no.
And that is often my response, like when we have like animal rights things like this, like let's shut down SeaWorld. I would be like, you know what? Go screw off. People like SeaWorld. But like, I'm
you're
with
not
them.
In favor of crazy torture type situations.
No.
I'm for not. Animals or people.
Or humans dying.
Or humans
like, that's
dying.
That's another thing that's not great.
Right. Like, no.
Like, once there's murders happening at SeaWorld, like, that's not good.
That's what
good.
You don't want.
If another human did that, they would be on death row.
Right.
Like, you don't let, they're called killer whales, people.
Yeah.
Like, you don't swim around with those.
That's a terrible idea.
It's the worst plan
I
ever.
I once swam with sea lions, and it was the most terrifying thing in the world, and they're not
killer
whales.
Like sea life anyway.
No.
But
I'm not,
it's terrifying.
You know what
all
I love?
Sea life is terrifying.
I'll tell you what I love.
Tell me.
Penguins.
Well, sure.
They're adorable.
They're cute.
They're real cute. They can swim and sort of flap around. They can do everything that you want an animal to do while being super cute.
Yeah.
So that's an animal I can get. That's a sea life animal I can get behind.
Yeah.
All the other sea life animals are slimy and I don't like them.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to eat them though.
Yes.
Not afraid of that.
Oh my God. Very much so.
Yeah.
Oh God. In final news. This is a good one.
This is, okay. So what happened was, first of all, the first thing that happened was that people were riding trolleys in Massachusetts. That's adorable. Keep up the good work. The second thing that happened...
Never change.
...was a 32-year-old named Michael Robertson was going around on the trolleys taking pictures of people's skirts and videos.
Yes.
That was in 2010. People got angry, as you might imagine, because it's rude to do that, and everyone knows it. That's a common decency thing. You know not to take pictures of people's skirts when you're on the trolley or any other form of public transit.
Yeah.
So it went to court.
All the way to the Supreme Court.
All the way to the state Supreme Court. Yeah. Where they ruled that it's not technically illegal for him to do that.
Yeah.
Possibly because no one in history has had the technology to be trying to do that. So there was no legislation on the books that would specifically prohibit it.
There is,
because
like,
who would have thought of it?
Right. There is like a law on the books that's like against voyeurism, but like it didn't. They like the court ultimately decided that like this
but
did not fall under the purview of that
law. Women
that
were dressed in public, you know. I mean, this he was taking. He wasn't. Like, voyeurism laws are about people in changing rooms and bathrooms and things like that, where that are supposed to be private spaces.
Right.
Women on the subway didn't, or the trolley, didn't get protected by voyeurism laws, so they ruled that it was technically legal.
Yeah.
The state immediately stepped in and passed a law against it, because obviously it's not acceptable just because it's legal. But they had a moment, briefly, in Massachusetts, where everyone was fully aware that it was completely legal to go around taking pictures up women's skirts.
I think what has, I mean... I'm glad that they sorted this out, because it's like you said, this is a common decency thing, and it's like, while sort of like being just like generally on its face hilarious, because like it's
also
it is what it is.
But, upskirting.
Well, that's the best part of it, because like now there's like a verb for doing this. Basically, it's upskirting.
Googling.
You can upskirt someone.
It's like the word Google.
Yeah.
We didn't have it until we had it, and now
now
it's
we
not
know
going
it
away.
Yeah, it's a thing. My guess is that while this may sound unfortunate, is that. Because of this, upskirting is now a thing.
On the rise.
So, right? Like, yeah. I mean, Massachusetts has outlawed it, but the other 49 states probably haven't.
Exactly.
So, watch out tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, you
on your trolley ride...
Wear pants tomorrow.
Wear pants tomorrow, for sure. Yeah. I know. And I was on public transit today.
You were.
Fortunately, in pants. So, that was not a problem. No. And also, in LA, since you're generally on public transit alone, it's not a problem.
Right. Alone or with... You know, bag ladies or, you know.
There's not people with smartphones.
People. No.
To get to the marathon, I had to take, I had to drive to a train, to a bus, to another bus. It was the most public transit I've ever taken in one day in
LA. Almost didn't get to do the podcast.
No, I almost didn't make it back because on the way back, no one seemed to know what bus I needed to take to get to the train. And I was like, this is my second leg of four legs on this trip. Like, someone has to help me get to the train. It was bonkers.
Yeah, totally.
But in any case, be on the lookout, whether you're on the subway, the trolley, or a ferry boat.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other adorable forms of transportation you could be on.
And men, if you're in a kilt of some sort.
Yeah. Don't fool around. It's not, because upskirting is not just illegal against women, but it's not legal, just, you know, just for women. Anybody can upskirt anybody.
Yeah.
In most states.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy.
Yeah, that's it. Finally happened. So that's the podcast for this week.
That's it.
Next
it was our 100th.
Next
share
week,
it,
it'll
people.
Be, yeah,
get
share
people,
this one.
Come on,
don't be ridiculous.
Make people listen to this.
Yeah.
Force them if you have to. I mean, we're just torture them.
Exactly.
We don't care.
No, we're not afraid.
Whatever you have to do.
Yeah. Next week will be 101, which
that's
is
it.
One past 100. At that point, we're clear into the triple digits.
That's right.
From here on out.
Yep.
This is where it. Really gets exciting.
Until we get to 1,000.
Until we get to 1,000. And at 1,000, things are going to get real exciting.
Yeah,
so stay tuned for that. We will talk to you next week.
Yes.
If you have considered trying roller skating in the past and have just been waiting for the opportunity,
do it.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, next week, hopefully, we'll get to stop talking about foreign policy.
Yes.
Probably not.
Fingers crossed. Probably not. But
bye.
Bye.